Welcome to Haunted Hospitality, Southern Stories Told by Spooky Gingers. I'm Robin.
And I'm Zoe, and I have a story for you guys today. But first, Robin, how is life?
So, Zoe, as we have discovered through, I guess, just the years, for whatever reason, shortly after you do something with your hair, other than dyeing it, I feel the need to kind of do something similar to it, too. So I happened to have been growing out my hair recently.
I also
By recently, I mean like the past year or so. And because of different circumstances, it has horrible split ends now. Mm-hmm. And I hate it. And it's so long and it is so frizzy. And my goal with my hairstylist, because we had a hair plan, was for me to be able to do a fishtail braid. And then I would ask her to chop it all off. I can't do a fishtail braid yet, but I am asking her to chop it all off. This is just not me. So on Wednesday of this week, which will actually be
like last
week and a half before other people hear this, I'm going to chop off my hair, just like a little kind of a tousled bob that's not like actually like up at my ear. It's more like a little bit shoulder length, but just shorter. And I'm going to do that, and it's going to be done.
All right.
That's how I am right now. How are you? How's life?
Well, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Well, life is good. So last episode I talked about like how I'm like sticking to a schedule and I'm trying to do my human things. So I also had a genuine problem where I would, on my downtime, my free time, I would just sit there and watch TikToks and just scroll and scroll for hours on end. And while I think it's okay in moderation, I'm not saying I'm giving up TikTok, but I was like, I haven't really done any of my many hobbies. So recently I've been like, you know what? I'm going to do some hobbies. So I have watched so many seasons of anime recently. And I just finished watching One Punch Man, which anime lovers will be like, yep, that's a basic bitch one. And I just finished watching Mob Psycho 100, and then I flipped out about it to Kari. And I watched Spy X Family, which is, like, the first time I watched it, and it's been on my to-watch list forever. But yes, so I've been watching anime. And then, like, I always have these plans for crafts in my head, but I never actually end up doing it. So I finally, like, bit the bullet, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do something. So, this is very basic. Oh, you can't really see it because the blur. It's very basic.
This is my emotional support water bottle.
So now I have a water bottle and I have actually been drinking water from it because I now have an emotional support water bottle.
Did you make that?
Well, I didn't make the metal cup, but no, I did.
But you put the letters.
I did put the letters on it.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, good for you.
And because of that, I've been drinking water.
That's really good. Listen. I have a water bottle here, except yours is much better for the environment. I do plan on recycling mine.
Yes, it's a metal reusable one with a reusable silicone straw, so...
Oh, you're just ticking so many boxes, I love it.
So many, so many. Well, that is my life update. Do you have a something-something?
I do. So, I feel like we're doing a lot of, like, New Year's things right now, even though at this point we're probably at mid-January when this comes out.
But yeah.
I did compile a list of 5 horror movies I want you and I to watch this year.
Okay.
Because you're my horror movie buddy, and because you watch the screen when I cannot. So I'm going to put the name, director, year it came out, and then I'm giving the synopsis that can be found on Rotten Tomatoes for all of these. So the first one is... Nope. Jordan Peele, 2022. Have you seen it?
I have not, but I need to.
Okay. The synopsis is, a man and his sister discover something sinister in the skies above their California horse ranch, while the owner of a nearby theme park tries to profit from the mysterious otherworldly phenomenon.
Interesting. Okay.
I think it has something to do with aliens.
Oh.
The reason I want to see it is much more about Jordan Peele than anything else.
Yeah.
I like have so much trust in him that even though I'm not particularly into the thought of aliens, even though like the thing is, I just totally think that life on other planets does exist. It's just far away and not going to be a concern of ours for a very, very long time. Just my thoughts on that. But anyway, I just trust him to make a good movie. The next one I have is Smile.
Yeah.
This was 22, directed by Parker Finn. This is the one where if you saw random folks smiling just kind of in guerrilla marketing, that was this. The synopsis reads, after witnessing a bizarre traumatic incident involving a patient, Dr. Rose Cotter starts experiencing frightening occurrences that she can't explain. As an overwhelming terror begins taking over her life, Rose must confront her troubling past in order to survive and escape her horrifying new reality.
Yeah. The only thing I know about that one is the cinematography plays mind games with you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And people smile. That's another thing you know about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I did know that.
This next one I have seen, but you haven't. And I really want... I've seen it once. I really want to think about it again. And I want to talk about it again.
Okay.
So it's Us, which is also Jordan Peele, which is 2019.
I have seen.
You have?
That's the Red Hand Mile thing, right? Where the people underground and the people above ground.
Well, can we talk about it sometime? I really want to talk about that movie.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to read the synopsis anyway. Uh-huh. Accompanied by her husband, son, and daughter, Adelaide Wilson returns to the beachfront home where she grew up as a child. Haunted by a traumatic experience from the past, Adelaide grows increasingly concerned that something bad is going to happen. Her worst fears soon become a reality when four masked strangers descend upon the house, forcing the Wilsons into a fight for survival. When the masks come off, the family is horrified to learn that each attacker takes the appearance of one of them. Such a good movie.
Wow, that's a pretty big spoiler to put in the synopsis.
Like, I feel like they kind of have to put it in, though, because it was so evident from, I think, the previews, if I remember that correctly. And, like, there's a bigger reveal.
That is true, yeah.
That's true. Okay, the next one I have, this is older. It Follows by David Robert Mitchell.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, you don't have to. Don't worry about it. I'm going to read the Rotten Tomatoes synopsis. After carefree teenager Jay sleeps with her boyfriend Hugh for the first time, she learns that she is the latest recipient of a fatal curse that is passed from victim to victim via sexual intercourse. Death, Jay learns, will creep inexorably toward her as either a friend or a stranger. That's a line I find very interesting. Jay's friends don't believe her seemingly paranoid ravings until they too begin to see the phantom assassins and band together to help her flee or defend herself. So the real reason I want to watch this movie, there's like this clip of it that was released, like after it had been out for a while and I came across it, and it's just this character who I'm having to assume is Jay, the main character, in like a classroom in high school. And she is seeing this person figure out the window, kind of at a distance. But every time she looks away and looks back at it, it's like getting closer until I think at some point, like it's following her in the high school hallway. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of like fascinated by it. This next one is the one I definitely want to watch most. Mostly because it stars Toni Collette, and I've heard it's, like, incredibly, incredibly good.
Mm-hmm.
Hereditary.
Mm.
What?
So, there's this YouTuber, his name, I don't know what his name is, but his YouTube name is Dead Meat, and he releases synopsises of movies, including clips of the movie. And so mm-hmm. I've seen the synopsis of It Follows and Hereditary or Heredity, whatever, however you pronounce
Hereditary.
It. Yeah. And that one is, I don't like gore, and this Hereditary has a lot of gore in it.
I didn't know that. I know like a guy bursts into flames because that's like the famous still from the movie.
There's a different famous still that I think of every time I think of that movie. Which is a little girl's head being eaten by ants.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm still probably going to watch the movie, but you don't have to. It is directed by Ari Aster and was released in 2018. And the Rotten Tomatoes synopsis says, when the matriarch of the Graham family passes away, her daughter and grandchildren begin to unravel cryptic and increasingly terrifying secrets about their ancestry. trying to outrun the sinister fate they have inherited. Like, that just sounds fascinating.
It does.
And the other thing is, I just realized when I finished putting this together that these are all directed by men. So I'm going to really try to find women-directed horror movies.
Hereditary also, or I cannot say that word. I'm sorry.
Hereditary.
Yeah, that one. So it also suffers from no light syndrome. Like, you know how people are joking that TV shows are too dark these days, and it's like, yeah, they really cover serious topic. It's like, no, turn on the light. Like, Kari and I could not see what was happening on the screen. Like, we had to turn on the special mode on his TV that allows like super blacks to like, it has the super 4K whatever. Like, you cannot see what's happening on the screen.
Okay, so I thank you for that warning. I find, and I don't like this about myself, I find that I don't mind it so much because I'm like, oh, it's just their artistry. And again, I don't like it about myself, but I'm actually fine with it.
Well, we were watching it and it's like a completely black screen and it's just really gross noises. And we're just like, ugh.
I get that. Uh-huh. That sounds gross.
It's okay. You watch all your horror movies covering your eyes anyway, so it doesn't make a difference. That's true. To you.
It really wouldn't affect me. Okay, so that was my something something.
Well, thank
so
you.
We have a story for us today.
I do. And this episode is going to be one of the people I think I've mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast that I said I wanted to cover. And then as I was doing my notes, I was like, oh, shoot, a taco mushrooms. This is kind of brutal. So I do want to cover him still, but just a warning for everyone. This is kind of an intense episode. I know a lot of our episodes can be lighthearted, but this one is not. And this is a trigger warning for sexual assault, just letting you know. And it's, some of it is child sexual assault, unfortunately. So this week, I am going to cover Pee-wee Gaskins, who is the most infamous serial killer from South Carolina, the very state that Robin and I reside in.
That is true.
Very true. So Pee-wee Gaskins was born as Donald Henry Parrott Jr. on March 13th, 1933, in Florence County, South Carolina. I don't know exactly when he changed his last name, but Parrott was the last name of his mother, and I think he changed it to Gaskins because that would be his father. I just think that at the time of his birth, they didn't know who his father was.
Okay.
I'm going to be calling him Donald from now on just because talking about what he does and then calling him Pee-wee just doesn't really jive with me. So I'm going to be calling him Donald, but the reason he got the nickname was because he was a very small person. He was kind of the smallest kid of his age group. And when he was a full grown adult, he was only 5'5", which is an inch taller than me. And he was 130 pounds, which is significantly lighter than me.
Mm-hmm.
Donald had a really bad childhood. He grew up in a poor rural part of South Carolina. He was neglected by his mother, Yulia Parrott, and he was abused by male relatives. He had a lot of siblings and cousins and friends, and they weren't exactly school smart. They were kind of a parents had a bunch of kids and didn't really watch them kind of family.
Mm-hmm.
When he was 1 year old, he was able to obtain a bottle of kerosene somehow because nobody was watching.
1 year old?
Yeah, 1 year old.
Mm-hmm.
He drank the kerosene and,
oh my God,
like the whole bottle. And I don't think they sought medical help for him. And so he had convulsions until he was 3 years old. So
I'm shocked he survived.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people think that perhaps his, he was never diagnosed with anything, but he's a cruel, heartless man. So some people think that might have come from some sort of thing that happened to him during this kerosene situation.
Okay.
So when he was a preteen, he and his friends Marsh and Danny were called the Troubled Trio. And they would hire sex workers, they would rob houses, and then they would rape other little boys. And they told the boys, if you tell anyone, we'll kill you. And so they didn't get caught for the longest.
Oh my god. How old were they when this was happening again? Like 13?
Preteen, like 12, 13, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up getting caught in the act. And so they were all arrested. They went through trial. I think it was kind of like a slap on the wrist because their age, they didn't actually go through any jail time.
What about juvenile?
Nothing. No.
Okay.
I think it ended up being like parole for a couple months or something like that, because immediately after the trial, the two other friends just moved towns.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't think they had to really do anything for it, because this is the early 1900s. So we didn't really have the county to county or state to state communication. So I think for the other two, the parents just moved them to another state and they pretended like it never happened, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So just a little fact about his life. Donald, in this first trial that he faced, that was the first time he heard his name was Donald, because his entire life he was called Pee-wee. So he thought his legal name was Pee-wee.
Mm-hmm.
At 13, Donald was still terrorizing the town. He was just doing it solo now. And he broke into his cousin's house. And when she woke up and was like, what are you doing? He attacked her with a hatchet and then left her body in the ditch.
So she died?
No. So she was barely able to survive and she was able to get help. And they called the police and he was caught, tried and convicted and sentenced to 5 years to reform school.
Okay. Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah, this, I mean, he is an evil man, but this is an example of the system failing left and right and keeping him accountable for his deeds.
Yeah. I'm fully agreeing with you. I think I'm just processing.
Yeah. There's a lot of information, and this isn't even like the main reason he's known yet.
Yeah.
So his sentence was 5 years at this reform school. It was called the SC Industrial School for White Boys, which is a whole nother thing, too.
Yes, whole other thing.
So while he was there, unfortunately, they weren't focusing on rehabilitating him. Instead, it was kind of like a Lord of the Flies situation.
Were the boys kind of running the place themselves?
Yeah. And the older, more powerful boys were sexually assaulting the younger boys, and abuse, mm-hmm. neglect was rampant. They didn't get proper food. They didn't get proper housing. It was not a great place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so Donald was able to escape. And while he escaped, he got married to somebody who was unnamed in the sources that I could find. But she was about the same age as him. And she worked for this traveling circus. So he worked for the traveling circus. I guess she talked to him and said, hey, it's probably not a good thing that you escaped. You should probably go back and try out the rest of your sentence. And then once you're done, you can come back and we'll continue living together. So Donald voluntarily returned to the school and he stayed there for a couple more years until he was released in 1951 at the age of 18. However, okay. He did not go back to his wife on the traveling circus. Instead, he worked on a tobacco plantation for a couple years before he was arrested for attacking a teenage girl with a hammer, claiming that she had insulted him, but she survived.
Okay.
So he was tried and convicted, and he was sent to SC Penitentiary for 6 years. And while in the penitentiary, he killed his first confirmed victim. Donald claimed that it was in self-defense because in this jail, he was also being sexually assaulted, but he ended up killing a man named Hazel Brazil, who was the most feared man in that prison. And because of this, he earned the respect of the other inmates, but he was also given an extra 3 years of prison for involuntary manslaughter. So I guess most people agreed with him that it was self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1955, before his sentence was up, he was able to escape in the back of a garbage truck. So he was an escape artist. I wouldn't consider him unintelligent in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to do things that he was able to trick people, and he was able to get out on good behavior occasionally. And so he really was able to, like, trick people into trusting him.
I'm kind of really surprised by that, because that doesn't jive with the description of his actions or, like, how easily provoked he seems.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's he's polarizing, I guess, because it's like, on one hand, he just seems like an angry, violent brute. But on the other hand, he's able to, like, pull these hijinks and
he's settle, like, convincing people.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a dichotomy, definitely.
Okay.
So he escaped, and oh, I'm sorry. When he got married, he was not living with the traveling circus yet. This is where he started working with the traveling circus.
So oh, okay.
I think he was working on his wife's father's farm. Yeah. So here he started beginning. Here he was working in the traveling circus, but then he was recognized. And so he was arrested and returned to prison, but then he got parole in August 1961. So despite the fact that he killed somebody and got 3 years added to his sentence, and despite the fact that he escaped and had to be brought in, they were still like, yeah, we'll let you out early.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there was, like, a surplus of people. I have no idea, but I'm just wondering if that was, like, there were so many people in the prison, did they have to, like, let people go in cases they ordinarily wouldn't? Or maybe. Was it just happening like that no matter what? I don't know.
And maybe he was just good at convincing people.
Yeah.
So once he was released, he immediately went straight back to burglarizing and selling what he stole. And then in 1963, he was arrested for the rape of a 12-year-old girl. He was able to escape after being arrested, but then he was found in Georgia, and he was sentenced to 8 years of imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
But just, let's see, 6 years, no, not even 6 years, 5 years later, they let him out on parole. So once again, he got out early. So he moved to Sumter, South Carolina, which is a place that's within an hour's drive from Columbia. And he worked with a roofing company out there. And in September 1969, he claimed his first murder victim that was done just because he could.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a woman who he never learned the name of, and we never found her body. So we genuinely don't know her name. We don't know what happened, really. But he said that he was driving on the road and she was a hitchhiker, and he let her into his car and he decided to kill her. So he would torture her, kill her, and then dump her body somewhere.
So this is something that he admitted to after the fact?
Yes.
Okay.
So he does eventually get tried and brought to justice for this. So we do know a lot about him, and he did do a lot of interviews because he was the type of person who sought out recognition and the notoriety. So he spoke to tons of people, and he was like, yeah, I killed them.
Okay.
Yeah. After that, Donald would drive around on coastal highways and pick up anyone who would get into his car. And he would torture them, kill them, and sometimes cannibalize them. Yeah, I didn't see that coming either.
Yeah, okay.
So he said that he did it just for the pleasure of it, and that he would go out either every month or every 6 weeks, depending on who he was talking to.
Wait, who he was talking to? What do you mean?
So, like, in early interviews, he was telling people, yeah, I would go out every 6 weeks. But then in later interviews, he would tell people that he went out every month on the 10th.
Oh, see, that was one thing when you had said he had talked to so many people. I obviously don't doubt that he did any of the things that he's saying, because he seems and has shown that he is more than capable. But I did wonder, like, if at any point the story would begin to change.
Yeah, and I get to the exact numbers towards the end, but yeah. He has a number that he tells people, and the police have a number where they're like, well, it's probably closer to this. And his number is significantly higher than the police's number. And he exaggerates quite a few things because there are eyewitnesses and police reports that counteract things he says.
Okay.
So it's not much of a consolation, but it's a slight one knowing that he could very much be exaggerating right now.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was asked, why did you just kill these people? And he said he wanted to do it to quell his feelings of bothersomeness. So I've heard about this in other stories of serial killers where they just like get an itch, like an urge to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's what
he's alluding to? Because that's an interesting word to use, bothersomeness.
Yeah, I that's what I read it as. But no, he said the words bothersomeness.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he called these his coastal kills, and he said that he killed 80 to 90 people like this. But I feel like if there were 80 to 90 bodies along the coast, somebody would have picked up on it. Like, they would have found...
So nobody found any of these?
No. There's not a single one of these bodies that were found.
Okay.
The ones whose bodies were found or who have been confirmed to be connected to him, I have names for.
Mm-hmm.
So, without the evidence, a lot of people doubt that it's that large of a number. What people say that he's trying to brag in a twisted, gross way.
Mm-hmm.
And so
when you said yeah, he wanted to like gain the notoriety.
Yeah. So like this was to him, like, you know, in high school you would like brag about, oh, I only got like 4 hours of sleep last night. Well, I only got 3, you know. It's not something to brag about, but it's for some reason what we decided to brag about. It's kind of like that, just to a darker level by like 100 times.
Yeah, much, much darker.
Uh-huh. The first, well, technically second, if you include the guy in prison, the first confirmed killing that we have is in November of 1970. He killed his own niece, Janice Kirby, and her friend, Patricia Ann Alsbrook. Janice was only 15 and Patricia was 17. And he was 37 at this point. He beat both of them to death with his hands. And he said the reason he killed them was because they were using drugs.
It's just horrible.
Yeah. So I guess it's really weird. And then the next death was a year later in March. Well, not quite a year, but the next year in March 1971, he poisoned Martha Ann Dix. Some sources said that she went by Clyde and wore men's clothing. However, one quote I saw said that Donald called her Clyde. So, I don't want to call her that if that was something her killer called her.
Yeah, and if that's how we know it by, know the situation by.
Right, but if there is anybody out there who knows Martha Dix and I'm misgendering her, I'm so sorry.
Mm.
Martha was 20 years old. He laced her Coca-Cola with acid to develop photographs.
Oh, the acid was the type of acid used to develop photographs.
Yeah.
How did he know her?
She was the person who sold his niece and her friend the drugs.
How far apart were the murders?
So the first one was in November of 1970, and the next one, Martha died in March 1971.
That's he must have been, like, fixated on this.
Yeah, so...
I mean, that's actually what happened.
He said the reason he killed her was because she was the one who gave the drugs to his niece, who he killed for using those drugs, which that doesn't add up at all. But some locals, the rumor mill was that she might have been pregnant with his child and he didn't want a kid. And that might have been the reason he killed her. But
wait, I have a follow-up question that I just realized I should have asked. Uh-huh. Did they not know that he killed his niece and her friend with his bare hands?
At this point, they were missing people.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And Martha became a missing person at this point as well. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I don't know if they were officially ever reported missing, because this was a rural, close-knit community that didn't really like police interference. Mm-hmm. I genuinely don't know if they were reported missing, but by the time their bodies are found, we know how many years they were missing.
Gotcha.
So this next one is probably one of the more rough ones. In June 1973, Donald drowned pregnant 22-year-old Doreen Hope Dempsey and her 2-year-old daughter, Robin Michelle Dempsey. So Doreen had stayed with Donald previously when she was previously pregnant and gave birth to her daughter, Robin. And then she went up north, I think, to North Carolina for a little bit. And then she found herself pregnant again, but she was breaking up with the father of the child. And so a couple of friends drove her to Donald's house, and she went inside alone while her daughter stayed in the car. And she talked to Donald and she asked if she could stay with him again. And he asked her a couple questions, and then he realized that the father of her unborn child was Black. And Donald was extremely racist. Mm-hmm. And so he asked her to walk with him to the pond that he had in his backyard, and he drowned her in the pond. And then he went back outside to the car and told the friends that had driven Doreen and said, "Hey, yeah, she's staying with me. Let me pick up Robin and I'll bring her inside." And the kids were like, the guys who drove her were like, "Okay, cool." And so Donald took Robin and brought her to the pond and drowned her within feet of her mother.
That is just so horrific.
Genuinely.
That is so horrific. And I'm trying to get in the minds of like the people who had driven them there. I guess the thought process would be like, well, she trusts him. Mm-hmm. And like, you wouldn't jump to, oh, he just killed her.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, she was pregnant, so maybe they're like, maybe she doesn't want to come back out. She's like, doesn't want to heavy lift things.
Yeah.
But, and they were friends. All four of them were friends.
Yeah. Even like, though you had said that he had drowned the daughter too, I like probably was still like hoping that like the friends would be like, ah, no, we're not going to. And you, the daughter, I was, yeah.
Yeah, it's just insane because he seems to have no remorse for it at all.
Clearly. So at this point, if I'm kind of keeping track, he seems to be mostly targeting young women or like older teenage girls at this, yes, in terms of like killing, other than Robin, of course.
Yes.
And potentially the others who he found on the coast.
Right, yeah. However, this next one kind of breaks that trend. Mm-hmm. In June 1974, he killed his best friend, Johnny Sellers, by shooting him in the back of the head. And then he stabbed Johnny's ex-girlfriend, Jessie Judy, to death. So Johnny was 36 and Jessie was 22, which that's a little ick. But Donald and Johnny had stolen a boat together, and Donald sold it, and Johnny went with Jesse to Donald's place and asked for his portion of the sale. And Donald said that he wanted to keep it for himself, and so he shot Johnny in the back of the head. And he was afraid, he says later that he was afraid that Johnny was going to sell him out to the cops. And then he killed Jesse because he was afraid that she would turn him into the cops for killing Johnny.
Yeah. I feel like in a lot of serial killer cases, we see it just kind of being like random people.
Mm-hmm.
They kill, and like, I'm going to assume that there are random killings because he alluded to those, right?
Right.
But he really is targeting like a lot of the people that are close to him in ways that I am really shocked that by this point he has been out of the prison system and not put back into it, especially with the mom and her daughter, since like there are witnesses who clearly would have last seen them being with him.
Yeah. And he is in and out of jail for the most part throughout this time period, but he's in jail for petty theft or Grand Theft Auto, things like that.
Yeah, it's not this.
Yeah. And I just want to focus on like the cowardice of shooting a man in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And then this pattern repeats in a minute, but he'll shoot the man and then he'll stab the woman. And it's just like this ego thing that he has.
How does that equate to ego?
Because it's like he thinks he's afraid to be less than the other man. So he uses the long range weapon and shoots him in the back of the head. So it's always considered cowardly if you kill someone and then he will stab the woman because he believes he's better than women.
There's a lot of hand-to-hand violence with women.
Mm-hmm.
Story. It almost feels like he's going out of his way to have hand-to-hand violence with women.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, other than the fact that he clearly is going out of his way, but I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. And then the next one was in February 1975. Donald was paid to kill 45-year-old Silas Barnwell Yates. He had been in an argument with his ex-girlfriend Suzanne Owens, and she and her husband paid Donald $1,500, which is $8,300 today, to kill Silas. And so Donald slit Silas's throat with a knife, but he claimed later that he did it with a karate chop.
I don't believe that.
No. Like, yeah. They were interviewing him, and they asked him, or he was explaining how he killed Silas, and he's like, and with my bare hands, I took him out. And the police officer was like, he was killed with a knife, sir. And Donald was like, nope, it was with my hands.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So one of Donald's friends, Walter Neely, was going through a divorce, so Donald decided to kill his ex-wife. So Donald broke into his ex-wife's house, and he stabbed Diane Neely, the ex-wife, to death on April 10th, 1975, and then shot her boyfriend, Avery Howard. And he claimed that it was because Diane threatened to turn him in for allowing underage teens into his house to have sex. Like, they were having sex with each other in his house.
Okay.
And he also said that Avery had asked for money to pay for attorneys, and he might use turning Donald in as blackmail to get that money. So he claimed the reason he killed these two was because they had evidence against him that could get him in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been simply as, oh, my buddy's getting a divorce, let me kill his ex-wife and his ex-wife's new boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometime between that and October, Donald either kidnapped a 13-year-old girl or enticed a 13-year-old girl to come with him. So she lived in Charleston. Her name was Kim Gilkin. And he kept her in his house. And it's an argument if it was consensually or not, but she's 13, so it's kind of automatically not consensual.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he did rape her and then allowed other men in his social circle to also sexually assault her.
God. Okay.
Yeah. And then he was afraid she would turn him in to the police, and so he stabbed her to death and buried her.
How long was she there for?
We don't exactly know. We know that she disappeared sometime around April, but she was kind of like a runaway risk. And so her parents didn't really, like, we don't know if she immediately went from her house to Donald's house.
Or if she just ran away for a bit and then that's how
he came to her. Yeah.
She could have already been vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. And then the police, sometime around October, were investigating her disappearance, and it led them to Donald's house. But she wasn't there anymore because he had already killed her. So he was actually charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
That's what they charged him with?
Yeah.
There's a million other, I mean, kidnapping, rape, human trafficking, murder. There's a million.
At this point, all they knew is that she was at his house at some point.
Okay. Okay. I'm just, like, jumping the gun as to, like, what people should know.
And it does all come out, obviously, since I'm the one telling you this.
I assume that this came to light at some point.
I'm not, like, a soothsayer, or what is that the phrase? I'm not somebody who can, like, read the past.
Interesting. Okay.
I think they read the future. I don't know. I was just finding words. I'm sorry. So, Donald was in and out of jail. He was in jail at this point for stealing cars and the delinquency charge, but he was able to escape and hide away. And while he was in jail and while he was missing in the eyes of the law, the police were kind of starting to realize, hey, a lot of people die around this guy. Mm-hmm. They noticed a lot of his friends or family members were going missing. And he also seemed to be the person that they were last reported with. So at this point, the police are kind of on to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he, unfortunately, I don't know what was happening, but his hideout spot was his own house. So I don't know really what happened there.
It's a really bad hideout spot.
It is, but it worked, unfortunately.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the police didn't go. There.
Why not?
That's
ridiculous.
I don't know if he's like, if he wasn't the owner of record, that's just where he lived. Like, maybe he was renting it.
But they traced her to his house, so they knew his house.
That is a true fact that I forgot about until you pointed it out.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So okay. he was in his house, which is a mobile home on a large plot of land with woods in it, on that lot of land and that pond. So his next victims were Dennis Bellamy and John Henry Knight. Dennis was 27. John was 15. And Dennis was the brother of Diane Neely. So the woman that was divorcing his friend.
Yeah.
That was his sister. And then John is Dennis and Diane's half-brother. So on October 10th, 1975, Dennis and John went to Donald's house and said, hey, we gave you a bunch of guns. You promised to pay us for it. Where's our money? So Donald was like, oh, yeah, I kept, you know what? I don't have the money, but I keep the guns out back. Dennis, why don't you come with me? And we'll get the guns together.
Just one of them?
Yeah. So Dennis follows Donald into the woods. And there he shoots Donald. I'm sorry, Donald shoots Dennis in the back of the head with one of the guns that they came to collect.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves his body there. He goes back to the house. And John was like, where's my brother? And Donald's like, hey, we need more help because there's a lot of guns. So you come back. And so John follows Donald into the woods, sees his brother's body, hypothetically, because they walk up to it. And then Donald shoots him in the back of the head.
He killed all those three siblings.
Yes.
Okay.
So he does end up burying their bodies. But Walter Neely was at the house when this happened. And Walter is the buddy that he just killed the ex-wife of.
Mm-hmm.
So Walter sees...
He was at Donald's house.
Yeah. So he sees Donald leaves with one of them, comes back, leaves with the other, and neither of the other two come back. And Walter knows that his ex-wife and his ex-wife's boyfriend also recently died under suspicious circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So Walter goes to the police.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Walter.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being able to put two and two together.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Walter.
So Walter does actually end up getting in trouble with these two deaths as well. I think that he was actually tried for murder because they argued that he knew what Donald was about to do. And then he pled guilty. So, but he...
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Because I think he did know what Donald was about to do.
Okay.
So he went to the police and he was like, hey... Donald just killed these two men. He's confessed to me that he's killed more. And he's even told me where he buried some of the bodies. And so the police were like, cool, this is what we needed. The police go to his house and they arrest him on November 14th, 1975. And then on December 4th, 1975, Walter leads the police to the plot of land near Donald's house, where they find eight of his victims. I don't know exactly which eight, but it did include Dennis and John, the two brothers he had most recently killed, Doreen Dempsey, and her two-year-old Robin, so the mom and daughter. So they found those four bodies and four others. He was charged with eight murders, so one for each body that they found. But he was the main suspect at this point in 39.
Like 39 specific cases.
Yes. They were also calling other counties and even other counties in other states, asking them to go through their unsolved files and try to find anything that could tie back to Donald so that they could try just make sure. On May 24th, 1976, Donald was tried on one charge of murder. That was for Dennis Bellamy. He was found guilty on May 28th. So he was originally sentenced to death, but SC's General Assembly had to change to conform to the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that death sentences are unconstitutional. So even though he was sentenced to death, technically at this point, you weren't supposed to sentence anyone to death. So they changed it to life in prison.
Don't think I realized that there was a period of time where the death penalty was unconstitutional.
Yeah, there was a,
in the US.
A little window. I actually talked about it. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to like talk bad at you.
Catch me.
But
listen to me, Robin.
That the old lady, Velma Barfield, in the Velma Barfield episode, she was the first woman to be on death row after they reinstitutionalized it.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I knew you knew. I knew you knew.
Okay.
But, yeah, so he was sentenced to death for Dennis Bellamy's murder, but because of the laws at the time, he technically should never have gotten that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got changed to life in prison.
Okay.
So while he was in prison, in exchange for conjugal visits with his wife...
Wait.
I think this is a different wife.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever legally got married or divorced to that first wife, but I think I didn't see any sources outright saying it, but people were avoiding saying her name in every single source I could find.
Okay.
So I think it's a privacy thing.
Gotcha.
But in exchange for conjugal visits, he told the police where he left three more of the bodies. And so they were able to find Patricia Ellsbrook, the friend of his niece. She was in a septic tank. She had been missing for 6 years at this point. They found Kim Gilkins, the girl he kidnapped, and she was found in Williamsburg County. And then just a mile from her body, they found Silas Yates, the man he was hired to kill.
He really did. This feels weird to comment on, but like just scatter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other than the eight that were at his property.
And there was one more. I'll get to it in a minute, but there was one more there too. But they just didn't find her. So Donald was then charged with Yates' death because they felt like they had the most evidence for that one because they had the two people who hired him testifying against him. So while he's already in jail for one murder, he was charged with Yates' death and he was sentenced to a second life term in April 1977. And then 2 days after that trial ended, the police were able to find Martha Dix, the woman he poisoned, that supposedly gave the drugs to his niece and her friend. And so they found her body buried. I don't know where, but they found it buried. And then he admitted to killing two other people in Charleston, but he didn't know their names and their bodies were never found. And then this next part, I'm like, wait, what? So supposedly they gave him truth serum, which I didn't think technically worked or was permissible under law. I don't know.
I don't know if it's permissible, but I do know that's... I was really surprised to find that there's something that actually at least works enough that people think it works sometimes, you know?
Right. Like, I know it's not perfect and a strong enough mind can resist it, but...
That's just so wild to me.
Yeah. Yeah, but
like, that's literally a Harry Potter thing.
Yes, it is. And apparently they plucked it out of the book that was not yet written and gave it to him. And he confessed to killing Kim Gilkins, Patricia Alsberg, Martha Dix, and Janice Kirby, his niece. So now they have confessions for those four. And once he admitted to killing Janice, he led them to her grave. She was with the other bodies near his house, but they hadn't found her because she was kind of buried in a different location. And when they asked him, why did you bury Janice and Patricia, who you killed at the same time? Why did you bury Janice and put Patricia in the septic tank? And he said originally he was going to put them both there, but he didn't think his niece deserved to be in the septic tank. Yeah.
One could argue that
no one
neither. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but apparently he couldn't bear to bury the niece that he just murdered in the septic tank.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're almost done, I promise.
Thank you.
So the police, we're taking all of this. They're still gathering evidence, getting his confessions, finding bodies. They were gathering all of this because their plan was to have a separate trial for each individual person that he killed.
Yeah.
That was the plan. But Donald did not turn over a new leaf when he was incarcerated in the high security prison block at the SC Correctional Institution. There was another man there. His name was Rudolph Tyner. He was 23 and he was on death row for killing Bill and Myrtle Moon. They owned a store, a convenience store, and he robbed them and he killed them in the process. Bill and Myrtle's son, Tony Simo, hired Donald to kill Rudolph because he felt like the appeals process was taking too long. So I think we've covered this on the podcast before, but when you get a death sentence, automatically the appeal process starts. And so that's why between getting a death sentence and actually having the execution, there's many years.
Yeah.
And I believe that's a good thing because if we're going to have the death sentence, which is controversial on its own, you better have many, 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 many eyes on this case before you actually have it happen.
I completely agree. And I mean, I've said on this podcast where I'm like anti-death penalty. So I absolutely.
So, but Tony believed it was taking too long. So he offered Donald $2,000, which is $6,170 today, to kill Rudolph. And he's like, what do I need to give you to make it so you can do this? So apparently Donald had tried a couple times to kill him, but it didn't really work out. Rudolph was under too high of security for him to really get close to him. So Donald told Tony to put some C4 into the heel of a shoe and mail it to him. So Donald was able to get this because apparently there was no screening. And he took the C4 and he made a makeshift bomb by putting the C4 in a radio and passing it to Rudolph and saying that somebody has a message for him. So Rudolph then held the radio in his hands, and I guess the plug went into Donald's cell and he was able to plug it in. I don't know, the details were kind of hazy on this, and I'm like, I feel like that's not possible. Like, do they have plugs in prison cells? So he was Donald was able to detonate the bomb from his prison cell while it was in Rudolph's hands, and it blew up, killing Rudolph in the process.
I feel like I feel like that was really obvious of him. Like, I feel like it's obvious it's Donald.
Oh, yeah. No, so I don't think he was trying to hide this at all. He just...
That's a good point, because, I mean, right now he's, like, in the worst position he could be in.
Exactly.
He's not getting out of it.
He already has 2 life sentences, and he knows that they're going to try to add more to his sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And so Donald... Okay, well, before I get back to Donald, Tony, the son who hired Donald, ended up getting sentenced to 8 years in prison, but he was paroled after only 4.
Hmm.
So Donald did end up being tried for Rudolph's murder, and unlucky for Donald, the death penalty was now reinstated in South Carolina, and so he was given the death sentence for Rudolph's murder. And this is why Pee-wee Gaskins is considered historical in a way, because Rudolph was Black and Donald became the first white man in South Carolina history that was sentenced to death over the murder of a Black man.
Oh, wow.
And there were a lot of people who were sentenced to death before it was temporarily uninstated.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that was kind of their go-to for a very long while.
And it had taken, what was this year? 1980 something?
82, I believe. Yes, 82. Oh, well, yeah, 82.
And the death penalty, it was only like a few years it was out, right?
I think 77.
So yeah. So what we're saying is basically like, The lack of death penalty has pretty much nothing to do with it. It's just like literally no white man was getting sentenced to death because of their crimes, which of course there were many in South Carolina and in the South.
Yeah. And I saw one source that said that there were very, very few white men who were even found guilty for the murder of Black men, despite the fact that they were very obviously the killer.
That tracks with a lot of what I've seen, too, like in the research and looking back and everything.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was a mark of times finally changing. I don't know if it was a mark of this man's just so horrific that even a group of white peers were like, nah, you gotta die. I don't know. But yes, he went down in history in that way. So Donald confessed to over 100 murders. But if you've learned anything from this episode, you know he is a man who is proud of how evil he is.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't evidence of that many. And many believe that he's just trying to inflate his own ego. When he was asked if he had any remorse for killing these people, he admitted that he wished he didn't kill Janice, his niece, or Jesse Judy, the ex-girlfriend of the friend he killed over the boat money. But those were the only two he... and had any guilt over. So Donald Pee-wee Gaskins was executed on September 6th, 1991 at 1:10 a.m. via electric chair. His last words were, "I'll let my lawyers talk for me. I'm ready to go." His half-sister, Carol Hoddle, was interviewed after his death and asked how she was handling everything after learning the truth about her brother. She said, "I've always been a staunch supporter of capital punishment, but when it came down to the wire, it wasn't that I thought his life should be saved. It was just, we came from the same mother. I was torn. I am torn." But despite her being torn, she lived in fear of him and for all of her life. She said her life was filled with cops coming to our backyard or wherever, digging for bodies. Carol left South Carolina when Donald came back in the news for the last murder. And then the capital punishment, it was kind of a big thing. She said that it was just too much for her to handle. And she said that she feels like society's forgotten grievers. She said, quote, "There's a family who's innocent, but they're left with these terrible feelings of guilt and anger. We don't want innocent people to get hurt." And so that's the thought I kind of want to leave us with, is just think about all the innocent people, his family, the family of the people who died, the people who died, who are wrapped up in pain and anger due to the actions of a man who just thought he could kill because he could.
Who seemed to have no inhibitions for doing it. I really think that the quote you read from her about, "I was torn, I am torn."
Mm-hmm.
That's so honest.
It is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people could hate her for that, because a lot of people could be like, well, he's a terrible person, why should we think about you? Da, 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 da.
But and it's that's like. That's true, but that's also like. She's an individual whose brother did horrible things, but was still her brother. And she's not saying, I don't think he shouldn't be punished. I don't think he wasn't a danger to society. She's not even saying that she doesn't think that he should have died. She says she's just torn, because that's what it means to be in such a difficult position.
Yeah. And he was 14 years older than her. So by the time that she was born, he had already attacked his cousin with the hatchet.
Like, she lived in fear of him.
Yes.
She's also a victim of this.
She is. And
absolutely.
She has another quote that I didn't read. She was like, nobody ever thinks of the mothers, the brothers, the sisters of the killer, except to try to point blame, basically. And she's like, in a way, like, we're not the victims who died, but we're victims of him.
That's so true.
Yeah.
I'm glad she left.
Yeah. I probably would have gone now. Because, I mean, this is rural South Carolina. Like,
everybody knows that business.
Yeah. Like, Sumter today, I have been in Sumter, and when people would, because everybody talks to you there, I was literally just walking down the street, they'd be like, hey, what are you in town for? I don't know you, you know? And I sat,
really?
Yeah. and I talked to someone, and I was telling them what I was there for, and they were like, oh, I knew her. I grew up with her. Tell her I said hi, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So Sumter today, everybody knows your business. Back then, I can't imagine.
Oh, I'm glad she got out. And thank you for all of the research you did on this. It was not easy to hear, so I'm sure it was even much harder to collate and remember and write.
Yeah, this is another one of those episodes where it's just like, I was like, oh, I know this person exists. And I've heard other people cover this, and I'm not trying to be nasty or rude, but like, as part of a true crime podcast where you are partially comedians, like, your job is to try to make it a little bit lighter. And on this one, I just couldn't.
Like, I don't think that our job is to make.
I feel like you and I approach things a little bit differently. I'm talking about the other podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I was like, I really don't think we try to make light of murder.
No.
But like, I do know that's a thing that a lot of people do.
Yeah. And I genuinely think this is probably going to be my last serial killer at the very least, if not the last one for a while.
And I'm behind that 100%. So, like, Zoe, you and I have talked about this,
yeah.
I think, without kind of being recorded. But part of one thing, like, if you're wanting to make a really victim or survivor-centered, like, narrative almost of how you're telling this true crime story, it is incredibly hard to do when you are doing a serial killer, because by its very nature, like, you are following this incredibly horrible person.
Right. Like, I mean, honestly, a lot of the details I was able to find, I purposely did not include because I didn't want to subject you to that. And honestly, there's enough information out there that I could have talked about this for 2-3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I could not, by the nature of this story, I could not tell you the family members and the loved ones and the dreams and hopes the victims had. I had to only focus on the killer.
Well, I'm really, really glad you ended on the sister.
Yeah.
I think in cases where you can't focus on anybody but the criminal, it's really, I think you handled it very, very well by ending on the sister.
Well, thank you. And I just, I think we're getting true crime a little bit, not we, you and I, but generally, like, I heard recently of a case where, have you heard about those teens in Idaho that were killed in their college house?
Yeah, I have.
There was a woman on TikTok who just decided it was the professor who killed them, to the point where she made like a 25-part TikTok entire video of why she thinks it was the professor, to the point that people were harassing the professor.
Oh my God.
Even though he had nothing to do with it.
I mean, there are real world consequences for that kind of speculation.
Oh yeah, she's getting sued.
I figured. especially since now that, like, everything, when you're talking, it's like, when people do this, they're talking to the internet, which means you're talking to everybody, and especially on any platform, but like, really, TikTok is designed, it's not person to person. It's not like you're talking to, like, your followers. It's like you are hoping this gets on the For You page. Everybody who posts to TikTok hopes that whatever they put in their video is going viral, and it has a pretty good shot of it relative to other platforms. So, like, the fact that people are, like, throwing under the bus sounds weird, because it's like there's nothing to be throwing them under the bus for. It's just people are putting things out there, like, without any context. Like, we know so little about this case.
Mm-hmm.
So little.
And, like, I feel like there's this pressure, this drive to be the person who delivers the newest news. And so they're putting videos out without knowing everything. And Robin and I
do that.
You and I talked about before we even started this podcast, about we are not going to cover anything unless it's already settled and done.
Unless it's already settled and done, or if it's unsolved, it's been unsolved for a very, very long time.
Right.
And there's nothing, like, we could say that could hurt, like, somebody by, like, saying, like, well, we think you did it, and then it comes back to bite that person, you know?
Right. And I feel like you and I, we already had this conversation, and we're a little bit on our soapbox right now, but just... I guess the reason I brought this up at the end is because I kind of want to assure our listeners that you and I do our research, and we approach this in a mindful manner with the thought process of, is this going to hurt anyone?
Yeah.
And you and I don't make money off of this. Like, we have a Patreon. We have a couple ads that roll in, but we're in the red. We're so far in the red. We're doing this because we want to, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I guess that's why I brought it up. Just to let our listeners know that, hey, we're doing our best to be conscientious about this. And if you feel like at any point we've stepped on someone's toes or did something, please let us know, because we would love to do a correction. We would love to, please.
We would love to. So Zoe, thank you for your story today.
You're welcome.
And everyone, if you appreciated today's episode, please rate, subscribe, review, tell a friend. You can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/hauntedhospitality. For $3 a month, you get a new episode with us.
Yes. And if you and it comes out on the 13th, because we're spooky.
Getting your line.
I'm so sorry. I'm still in my soapbox a little bit. I'm thinking about things. But also, if you want to see my sources, you can head over to hauntedhospitality.wordpress.com. That's another thing we're really proud of. Like, we put our sources out there. Mm-hmm. And if you have your own spooky story that's true crime, supernatural, anywhere in the world, please write to us at hauntedhospitalitypodcast@gmail.com, or you can slide into our DMs.
Yes, we're on Facebook, Instagram.
Instagram burp.
And TikTok at Haunted Hospitality. We're also on Twitter at Haunted Hosts. We hope to see you there.
Stay spooky.